I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Simon Biltcliff. Simon is the creative and rebellious soul behind print services agency Webmart. An ambitious student of economics and politics with a natural bent for brand development, he set up Webmart in 1996 with £10,000 of his own money and has never looked back, forming the UK's foremost and perhaps only Marxist capitalist business. With a goal of doing good while doing well and building relationships of trust between customers and suppliers, he also loves undertaking massive physical challenges, including ice marathons and completing the notorious Marathon des Sables. Simon, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for that great intro.
So I've got to ask you before we kind of get into the substance of Smashing the Plateau, what is a Marxist capitalist business?
Well, it's really a lot simpler than it sounds if you've not come across it before. Basically, capitalism is fantastic at creating value. I think nobody would doubt it's the best economic system in the world at creating value. But it's really, really bad at sharing it out fairly. Whereas Marxism is incredibly good at sharing it out, but really poor at making it. Making the value in the first place to share out. So you need to have capitalism first. So you need to create the economic surplus and you need to create profits, which obviously is a really important part of capitalism. But then you need to share out that profit using Marxist redistributive principles. Marx came up with the concept of surplus profits. So you work out what enough is, both enough for the business, so you reinvest that, and that gets retained within the business, and then enough for the ownership group, so the people who have put themselves on the line to start it off and are still, you know, doing the heavy lifting for the organization, and then share out all of the surplus, all of that spare profit with the rest of the team. And that drives the kind of behaviors that we all want within our organization. And so that's why I call it a Marxist capitalist business, because it's using the power of both to the benefit of all.
It sounds great. And yes, I've seen businesses that do this and do it well, really create not only a vibrant internal infrastructure and tremendous engagement from all the people who are involved, but they also do a great job of succeeding in the marketplace.
Absolutely. And if you've got everybody engaged and aligned to the purpose of the organization and benefiting from its success in three ways, I look at it, emotionally, intellectually, and financially, not just the financial side, then obviously that it really does give a force within the business to achieve your targets with much lighter management input than you would otherwise have.
That sounds great. So, Simon, you know, given the fact that you clearly understand what it takes to create a business that works, what have been some of the plateaus for you?
Well, all the way through, you have a range of different things that come in and really give you a good kicking, which you need to overcome at many stages. First is learning to become a leader. Really, you don't tend to get leadership training in the way that you need it. Yes, you can do MBAs and you can do all this kind of stuff, but the true leadership, you have to learn it through experience and through having a mentor group, you know, people that you trust, people that you know about business, who've tried it before, who you can bounce ideas off. So getting an inner team of people that you can share and confide in was the biggest one. So some ideas that you have are just dreadful and could kill your business straight off, and it sounds like a fantastic idea
you know, at the time. But it you know, if you don't carry people with you, then it really does become a very negative force within the business and stops it growing, stops it doing the things that you want to do. I mean, all the way through from at the early stages, getting the first graduate that I had in, Marcus Smith, who's now started his own business in Australia, doing fantastically well. And, you know, if it hadn't have been for him being so good, I don't think I would have stayed at a very small business as a kind of lifestyle business rather than one that I want to grow. But because he took, you know, the lessons that I gave him and ran with them, then that allowed me an inflection point to go up so I could grow the business. And all these stages through the life cycle of a business, then there are plateaus that you hit. I mean, we hit one last year with somebody was running the business predominantly, you know, on my behalf, and really didn't bring the team with them, and unfortunately we had to part ways, and we're in the process of rebuilding again now. So, you know, this is 20 years into the business. So these things there are constant plateaus that, if you like, that come through the business, because at a different stage, rather like when you grow up as a person, you know, baby, you have things like you're falling down, and then you go through, you know, the first schooling, and then you go through adolescence, then you go through your first job and getting married, and all of those stages, you'd think, well, you should know how to deal with these kind of experiences. But of course, each one is unique and different. And a business is no different from your own life. So you hit different stages in it, and you have to deal with fresh challenges. Hopefully, you'll deal with them as effectively as you can, as early as you can. But there's no guarantees in anything, and that's where the kind of tenacity, and the self belief, and the determination, all those kind of traits that you hear about in entrepreneurs, come to the fore. Because the easiest thing will be to think, oh, I'll just call it a day, but you obviously don't. You carry on and you push.
Yeah, and I think I was probably under the false assumption when I was just getting out of school that those kinds of challenges and plateaus didn't happen in the corporate world. You got a job and you just kept working and things would work out over the long run. And it doesn't work out that way at all.
It isn't. It's right. Back in the ancient Greek and Roman times, before we had formal written laws, they used to call it the laws of nature, or natural law. That's where the kind of basic premise around which all written law it was based on. And if you look at nature, you know, nothing is there forever. Everything has entropy. It dies on it if it's left long enough. And nothing carries on forever. You've got to keep kind of activating natural traits within leaf, you know, obviously if you look at oak trees and things like that, they're there for hundreds of years, but they're still looking at spinning out new startups in the way of acorns. You know, it's that kind of rejuvenation that you've got to get within your organization, as well as building on the kind of strength of what you've got. You've got to carry on thinking of new ideas and new improvements, and working with other people to come up to bring that energy back into your organization, because otherwise it really quickly does die, because there's no divine right to make money, and there's no divine right to exist in business like in anything else in life.
That's for sure. And you're right. It's a great concept to keep in mind. So, Simon, I wonder if we could go back to the story you mentioned where the person helped you and then you said moved to Australia. Can you go into a little greater depth about that story?
Yeah, I mean, Marcus was a graduate that I took on. The idea was I was starting myself and doing fantastically well in the early days. It was very easy to make money. I had great relationships with customers. I was saving them a lot of money, and it was going fantastically well. But you come to a point where you want to have holiday, or you want to make sure that you go and spend time with people, which isn't easy to do when you're working on your own, even with I had a great PA as well at the time. But it's not the same, and I knew that to build a business I had to get somebody who I could mentor, who I could train, who I could learn from as well, because obviously, like with anything, the new ideas come into the business and then you can apply them. And Marcus was the guy who stood head and shoulders above the rest of them in terms of enthusiasm and attitude and desire to do well, knew nothing about printing, and helped formulate, not just operationally, but used to have what we called the EMMs, or early morning meetings, where me and him used to get in at about 7 o'clock in the morning and brainstorm in a whole area of the business, just for an hour and a half until about 8:30 when we cracked on and with the day job. But in those, you know, that kind of sitting down and thinking deep in depth about a small area of the business was fantastically powerful. And that, you know, that constantly learning organization was really important. And it was nice for me to have a kindred spirit, somebody who would bounce ideas off. Sometimes they're great, sometimes I say they're not so great. Eventually, this is 8 years on, he met an Australian lady, Liv, who was working in the UK, and they got together, and he had a choice to make between, you know, she couldn't stay indefinitely in the UK, and it was a choice between working for the business that he loved or being with the person that he loved, and rightly he chose the latter. So he moved over to Australia to be with Liv, and we kept in touch, and have done ever since, and kind of brainstorm ideas still now over Skype. But he's set up his own business, Geni, in Sydney, doing a similar thing to what we do in the UK, and it's nice that we've kept that friendship now over 20 years. And now have a kind of very much a peer-to-peer network where we're thinking together still on ways we can improve both our businesses now. And I think that spirit of collaboration easily transcends whether you're an employee of the company or not. And that's something I very much believe, is that you can't out-compete people these days, because somebody has to lose, and they will, you know, what goes around comes around. People always get you back. But you can out-collaborate people by sharing and using that same power of what goes around comes around. The more you give, the more you get back by the power of collaboration. And that's just an example. 20 years on, Marcus and myself are still adding value, if you like, to each other's lives by still being mates and still sharing insight, and what's worked in the UK may work in Australia and vice versa.
That's really a great example. And I know one of the areas where many business leaders struggle is trying to recruit, train, mentor, and develop people like Marcus. What would you say are some of the keys to being able to do that successfully, particularly in today's marketplace?
I think being open and being honest, it sounds kind of pretty glib, but I'm from the north of England, and one of the things that is a differentiator between the north of England and the south of England is that from day one, we trust people. We don't have to wait time to be proven whether they're worthy of trust. We will trust people from day one. Now, then there's one or two things happen. Either they reciprocate and you're on to a different plane of relationship there straight away, or they'll try and do you over. And they'll generally do it pretty quickly, and you can tell pretty quickly as a consequence. And then they'll never be within the kind of trust network that you build up. But if you can get to meet people and get a level of trust with them in that first meeting, that'll stay with you for a lifetime. Obviously, you know, standard terms and conditions apply. Never breach a trust. If somebody tells you something that's in trust, you keep it in trust. You still use it. You know, it's Chatham House rules. I don't know if that translates over to America. Chatham House rules is where you use the knowledge that you have for the benefit of yourself and people around you, but you never attribute where it came from. So that's how you harvest information, and you can keep getting on the inside track of what's going on in the world without breaching a confidence. And that's a really powerful thing, I think, a skill to do. And if you can get to a trusting relationship within a very short period of time, and I'm talking an hour rather than a year, 10 years, which quite often is the case, then you've got a much better way of learning about what's out there as an opportunity, mitigating threats that are there to your business as well, because people will trust you with information knowing that it'll help you, and you won't breach that trust. So trust is a massively trust and transparency are the two ways that you can engage people to get into that kind of relationship that you want with, that you have with the people that you love already, that you work either in work or outside of work, the people that you care about. And if you can give that from day one, you can give trust and transparency, and it doesn't cost anything.
So what can you do in that first hour of meeting somebody new who is either a potential employee, potential future leader in your business, or potential collaborator? What can you do in that first hour to know whether or not you're going to be able to build a trusting relationship?
Be open with them about your weaknesses. It's part of a conversation. Don't, you know, you're not in a therapy session, but you just say, listen, I find this, I don't like doing this, or I don't find this easy, or I'm very poor at doing this. How do you deal with stuff like that? And by being open and being transparent and being vulnerable, I suppose, is the way. Because we, you know, as business leaders, we, especially, you know, if you're talking about people in a cohort of 40 to ages 40 to 60, vulnerability was seen as an absolute weakness in a position of, in a hierarchy. You know, and as a consequence, you kind of hold on to it for, you know, to hide it from view. Whereas if you're looking at millennials, you're looking at younger people, people up to the age of say 35. Then that's seen as a source of strength, because you're absolutely being honest with people. You're being straight with people. You're being somebody who's not trying to hide behind this persona that you've created. You're just trying to be you. And we all have strengths and weaknesses. I'm incredibly bad at adding up. I find very difficult. Numbers don't mean anything to me, which is ironic. Luckily, I've got, you know, great people in the business who are very adept with numbers. But I've never, ever being any good at, as you would call it, math, we call it maths over here. And so by saying to people, listen, I'm not, you know, I'm poor at this, and you're trying to show me something, I don't understand it, then A, you're up being honest with them, so they will actually dumb it down to the level where I can understand it. And secondly, that it's being authentic, it's being you. You're not trying to be something you're not. And I think if you give that kind of vibe over and saying, listen, this is what I'm not very good at, people are much more receptive to share back with you about what they're not so good at. And as a consequence, bizarrely, you get a much stronger relationship than if you start, you know, selling yourself to people, because, you know, we all naturally turn off at that. It doesn't have that kind of authenticity. When you go into the pub with people that you really, you know well, you're not, there is no front, there is no kind of persona that you're trying to be. You are you. And that, if you can get that into the workplace, it's seen as a great source of strength for the younger people in the workforce, whereas that makes us very uncomfortable in the older style of management, the kind of command and control side. And it does put you at a disservice, because the younger people do not like being managed. They don't want to be managed. They've never been managed. They've always done their own thing. They want to be mentored instead. And you can't mentor somebody if you're not honest with them too, as well. And it's a very different role in leadership, moving away from command and control. There are times, of course, in crisis that you need to take a firm. It's 0.1% of your business life. The rest of the time is much more kind of mentoring, spending time with people, and talking with them at a peer-to-peer level rather than they report into you level. And it's a different orientation.
So is it fair to say that if you're vulnerable first and you don't sense any reciprocity, that you're not receiving the same vulnerable message from the person that you're speaking to, that this relationship is not going to develop into one of
trust? It's superficial. If it was somebody that didn't like you, what would they say is your biggest weakness? You know, you can try that kind of interview type thing. But the truth of the matter is, I don't want people working within Webmart that don't want to be there. So that, there's no point us trying to be something that we're not. There's no point me trying to be something that I'm not. And I think from day one, then all of a sudden their barriers come down, and they say, actually, quite often at an interview, people say, actually, this isn't for me. That's fantastic. But you've got a level of saying that, yeah, that isn't working for you. But they know about us then, and quite often these days, when somebody, you know, you haven't taken somebody on, they become a net promoter of our business because of the honesty and the candidness of what we were talking about. We were just talking as friends, and then I'm trying to help them to say, well, the kind of business that probably would suit you is this and this and this. I can put you in touch with people who might be interested. Of course, then you know, this is using the power of your network to their benefit. That's really, really, and that goes back to collaboration. The bigger the network you've got, the more you can help people. You know, I just took on a young graduate, got a first-class degree from Manchester University, and he was humming and ahhing whether to join us or a healthcare, actually a GE, who he'd worked as an intern. And I said, I'll tell you what, give us a go. I know he worked for us as an intern as well. I said, give us a go. If in 6 months it isn't working out for you, I'll find you a job in healthcare. You know, and I've got enough people I know in the healthcare sector I could get him a job in that sector. There's no downside to it. And I think that's the kind of approach that you have to take. Say, listen, I'm wanting to do the best for you as well as us. And if it isn't working out, we both know about it and probably wouldn't take 6 months, but I will find you somewhere to that is more suited to you, you know, because it's in my, you know, it's my responsibility as well as yours to find the right fit for you.
Yeah, that's an approach that I would say is certainly different than what I experienced earlier on in my career. It sounds to me like it's a very powerful approach.
I think if you look at McKinsey, they've always done it. You know, they take on 10 people and then they know that 8 of them are going to be leaving after a year or something, but without any stigma. They're the alumni of the network rather than banished to a far-off kingdom where you never see them again. And I think you can learn an awful lot from that. Lisa, my PA, is going to be leaving in January. And I've helped her and supported her in starting her own business up. And as a consequence of that, you know, it's a style of management, if you like, which is much more enlightening. You've got to work with people and give them as good an opportunity as you possibly can. And if that means them leaving, well, that's good if it's good for them. Now, in return, she's training up Amy, who's my new PA, and she's got 3 months of handover, and that will be absolutely invaluable. And, you know, it's all written down what needs to be done in what's called the Bilty Bible of working practices and processes. That means it's easy for Amy to be successful as well. So I'll be helping Lisa to set up her business, and she's helping me to have a continuity of, if you like, service that, within the business that allows me to do what I want to do. And that's a much more enlightened and pleasurable experience than telling people to bugger off as soon as they possibly can.
It sure sounds like it. Simon, I wonder if we could go back and talk a little bit more about the mentor group that you mentioned earlier. What has your experience been with mentor groups, and why are they so powerful?
Well, mentoring is, I think America is a lot better than the UK for this. It's certainly seen, well, I went over to Silicon Valley to have a look around there, and the two things that were different, the only two things that were different in a positive way, was the kind of the risk profile of debt, as in people are more willing to lose it there than they are over here. And second thing is the people who have made it are almost seen as a, to get peer appreciation. It's nothing to do with how much money that you've made from selling or whatever you did with your business. It's about how much you give back to other people who are trying to make it. And that mentoring, it's almost like back in the medieval times in the UK, we used to have what's called tithe, which where you had to give 10% of your crop to the church. It was seen as a kind of payment for having God on your side. Well, I think now, there's a modern form of tithe where I think you should, if you've made it, you have a moral obligation to give about 10% of your time to non-profit, non-selfish means. And that can be through a number of different ways. And mentoring, I think, is one of the best because every time you mentor somebody, you as the mentor get every bit the same amount of value back as the mentee. Because you by listening to them and by hearing what they're doing, you're learning all the time. By asking them questions, you actually self-evaluate how well you're performing at the role that you're imploring to them to learn from. So the more you can mentor, the better you get within realms of being able to do the day job. But it's fascinating how many relationships that you get that then it's almost like an unwritten law of reciprocity. If you've helped somebody, they will spend a lifetime trying to help you back, even though you've never asked for it, even though you've never even intimated it. I get emails every day literally every day from people saying, I've just noticed this and thought it might be interesting to you. Or people putting people our way because of something that I may have done 10 years ago. And in fact, Amy, who's the replacement of Lisa I was mentioning before, was somebody that saw a speech I did at a school and thought, actually, went in to do an apprenticeship and applied for the role. So, you know, of course, then you never imagined that you would get any direct benefit back from having a speech at a school Thanksgiving, whatever it was, a kind of award ceremony. But it always seems to come back. It's, again, going back to natural justice. If you, the more you give, the more you get, and it's kind of a squared of what you gave in the first place. So mentoring is a great way of actually, especially if you're living it now. And I did a mentoring session with somebody in Barnsley, where I come from, and I got a lovely email from him afterwards. He said, in 1 hour, you managed to take my business further forward than I was trying to do in the last 4 years. It's only because you've got somebody. I had no answers, but I was just asking the questions that he'd been asking himself. And because it's an outside-in perspective of somebody actually doing business now, not did it 5 years ago or 10 years ago, actually doing it now, it has so much more gravitas than your self-evaluation or people who have, say, retired and are out of the kind of loop of modern business. And that's why I think it is really powerful. And at some stage, that person will then have a space in their life to mentor the next generation themselves. And yeah, that's how you get that kind of momentum of good coming through, because, you know, you give somebody an opportunity to benefit from it. They will then later on in life do the same, not only for back to you, but they seem to be able to do that, but they will also do the next generation of entrepreneurs or people wanting to have a great career being in the profit or not for profit sector, and that's how you kind of build the momentum for good. That you know, that's what we want to do in life, and that goes back to the initial statement you said. We don't want to just do well for ourselves. It's easy to do well for yourselves, but you want to do good as much as you possibly can every day, not just when you've made it, in inverted commas, but every day. There are always opportunities to help people in the day job, and that's part of the DNA of Webmart.
It's so true. It's so true. Simon, whom do you know personally who's been really successful at smashing plateaus?
Well, I had the honor of seeing a guy called Sir Tim Smith, and Tim Smith, S-M-I-T, is a guy that set up something called the Eden Project down in St Austell, and we were doing a speech together in London at in the middle of Soho, and we just realized we were actually on the same page as far as our organization's totally different. But he has created, in a far-flung corner of the UK called Cornwall, a world-class destination which is now being copied all over the world, and Lisa and the new partner of that she's setting up a business with went down to meet Sir Tim, and we had a fantastic night. He invited us to stay at his house and all this kind of stuff. And boy, he's got a million visitors now going through this thing a year. And it's just so powerful that, you know, you wouldn't believe it would be possible in a disused quarry in the far-flung reaches of one of the most deprived areas of the UK that you can create this world-class destination. And so he's smashed through all sorts of plateaus to get to create something that is a real movement now, that is, you know, working on projects, as I say, all over the world to emulate that. So he's a top bloke and a very nice guy too. There's lots on the internet about him if you want to have a bit more knowledge of how he's gone about it.
Sounds like a great example. Simon, what can we look forward to from you in the near future?
Well, I'm developing a software platform for doing what we do, for everybody, in effectively a global platform for that, which is a very exciting kind of prospect for me. That's a new style of business. And, you know, if you look at Facebook, the average age of people in Facebook is 29. The average age of people in Webmart, my business, is 39, and that is akin to Hewlett-Packard. So I'm hoping that by bringing a range of different young people into our ecosystem in the new business and get it down more to a kind of the radical side of that, but having a nice mix of youth and experience in that business, and also politics. The only way you can, there's no shortage of wealth in the world at all. There's more wealth than we've ever had. There's a shortage of distribution methodology, a fair distribution of that wealth amongst the people, which is why you end up with Trump, which is why we ended up with Brexit, and it's going to ricochet through the world. So you need to come up with better redistribution to make it so it's fair for people and people feel it's fair, and this is getting transparency into business, etc., and change of the law so people can't say, I've not done anything illegal, even though it's morally bankrupt, even though it's ethically totally wrong, but you need to be able to change the laws to get fair laws for people so we can all benefit from the economy. And so that means you have to get into politics, whether you like it or not, to drive the change that you wish to make. So in the next stage of my life, it will be getting into politics to help drive that change, not just by example of creating a business that does good for everybody in community as well as doing well, but then scaling that through throughout the United Kingdom.
Wow, that sounds exciting. So how can people learn more about what you're up to and follow you?
Well, there's a thing. I'm at the moment, I'm doing a daily podcast, which is just for a minute or two, just ideas that people have come up with that have resonated with them in speeches. There's also speeches. There's one that I did at Google in the UK, Google's, I think it's called Marketing Academy. So you can have a look a bit more about the Marxist capitalist business model there. And of course, LinkedIn. I'm connected with LinkedIn's a fantastic database of like-minded people. So there are only two Simon Biltcliffs in the world of LinkedIn. One is me and the other is my cousin who's a plumber in Doncaster in Yorkshire. So you'd have to do well to get different. I look a little bit like Che Guevara in my picture as well. So you should be able to find me pretty easily with a bright yellow Che.
Sounds great. We'll direct people there. Simon, has been great having you on the show today, talking about all sorts of aspects of what it takes to smash a plateau, and how those of us who are in leadership roles can help other people smash the plateau, which is really important.
Absolutely. Yeah. So lovely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. My guest today has been Simon Biltcliffe, the founder and CEO of Webmart in the UK. Thanks again, Simon, for joining us.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.